Welcome everyone to today's Q&A session on copyright. Back by popular demand, we have the authors of The Copyright Zone, photographer Jack Resnicki and litigator Ed Greenberg. So they're going to be available to you guys for the next hour, answering all your copyright questions. We invite you to submit your questions in the question panel on the control panel of your screens. And take it away, guys. Also, if I could just point out, at the very end of today's session, there will be a short 5-question survey, and we will be giving away a copy of The Copyright Zone. Over to you guys.
Oh boy, we got it.
Hello there.
This is Jack. I'm the photographer, also known as the cute one. And my partner here is Ed Greenberg.
I want to give props to my makeup artist, Kathleen. It did a great job, as you can see.
And all of you trying to adjust your screen right now to get a better view of us, this is all audio today. With that, I'm waiting for questions to come up on the screen. And if we don't get any, unfortunately, it'll just be me and Ed talking. and we'll be doing stuff. And we're going to go beyond copyright. We've done a bunch of copyright stuff previously. And there's a lot of other topics that I think are really important to photographers and artists these days. And we cover a lot of them on our blog. Our blog is www.thecopyrightzone.com. Thecopyrightzone.com. And there's been some really good articles, I think. Of course, I helped write them, so what else would I think? And one of the ones we got is a recent one we did is called Implied Consent, which is a wonderful, wonderful topic. It's something that if you've been infringed, it's something the other side is going to state all the time, that they had implied consent. You took a picture of somebody, could be a celebrity, could be a banker, could be anybody, a musician, and they provided the picture that you took to some type of outlets, to for an ad or a newspaper thing, and that third party is saying, well, there's implied consent for you to allow it. And this is a great article explaining why that defense doesn't work. And instead of, boy, this is good, I'm going to go on my words in edgewise before Ed could come in. One of the great things about this article is it has attached with it all the court filings, all the papers and motions that are attached with this, so you can see what this type of argument is like in the real world, in a real courtroom.
So let me get, this is a real pending case, and if you read our materials, you'll note that I, in particular, point out that 98% of all photo cases, the results you will never know. They are settled under confidential settlement agreements, so it's very, very rare that you'll know the result of a case. There are exceptions. The case that I have pending now is a public record, and the fact pattern you will identify with. Let me go through it real quick. There was an actor by the name of Taylor Negron, and he was performing in a movie. He filmed the movie, died just as the image was, just as the film was being edited and cut. And to do promotion for the film, to get distribution for the film, the producers of the film took an image shot by my client Patrick Shipstead of Negron, and they used it in advertising materials and posters and so on and so forth. And the producers had their own in-house attorney who, and I want to thank St. Jude for this, wrote an article on the importance of obtaining copyright releases for any images that you use in promotion or advertising. Well, the producers did not get any kind of release, did not get a license, and no time did they contact Patrick, who's the creator, author of the registered image. They used it, and we sued for copyright infringement. And the claim, essentially, the defense, one of the defenses was, in effect, that, well, the actor gave it to us. And the law is very clear that to have implied consent, meaning a license without a writing, you would need some kind of regular activity and a clear meeting of the minds. So the example we use in the piece is if once a week you do a job for a company, you shoot a picture of an employee, and the company pays you $500, there's no paperwork, you don't care how it's used, you've never cared, and one day Time Magazine decides to run that image on their cover because they're doing a story about that company, you have no claim. There's magazine because Time and the company can rely on your course of dealing and implied consent and a clear meeting of the minds.
But a lot of cases that defense doesn't work.
Right. And typically it doesn't work when you take a photograph of a celebrity or a near celebrity or a quasi celebrity, could be a local bank president. And he or she gives that image to someone or to their company and they run it.
Yeah.
The subject of the photograph, whether it's a professional model or actor, cannot give the consent to use your copyrighted image. Now, one more quick point on that article.
Yeah, because I want to get to some of the questions we got coming.
We have attached the court papers, and you can skim or read those court papers, and you'll see that when the faux experts on the web talk about legal cases, most of them couldn't even read the legal papers, but we put it there for you guys. Be my guest if you want to read them, but that's what a real set of litigation papers, and we put papers from both sides on there so you know what it really looks like.
And I will say that the article itself, as we wrote it, is a lot more interesting than hearing Ed talk about it right here.
What a compliment.
Because it's my brilliant editing that really worked on that, so it is a lot more interesting. We have one question from John here. And I want to get to this one. He says, I restore aged, damaged, and faded images. What is the time frame where a copyright release is required? Well, first thing, John, I want to say that the terminology you're using is a bit wrong. We don't like to say copyright release. We know a lot of people have been using that term. It's really not correct. You're not doing a copyright release. You are licensing images is what we're talking about. And you're asking about old, aged, and damaged, faded images. Anything photographed before 1923 is considered public domain, and you can do whatever you want with them. After that, then there's a question. And unless it's an image that has been released and you know that there is no copyright on it, you have to assume that you can't use it, basically. And those are known as orphan works. We've been trying to get Congress to pass an orphan works bill so people can use those images. There's people like Ken Burns who's thoroughly frustrated when he finds an image. And the legalities of it is if you find an image and you know the photographer has passed away and you know that the studio maybe that he shot it with, let's say it's a wedding picture of your grandparents or something from 1940, and the photographer is gone, the studio he shot for is gone, so you can't get permission from anybody. Legally, you can't use that picture. It's an orphan work. Just because there's nobody around doesn't mean anything. What you have to do is find the estate and get permission from someone. That's the correct way to do it. On the reality side is, who's going to come after you?
Also, because you've conflated some legal terms here. Generally, when you use the word release, it relates to a model release or a property release. Understand that a copyright is a property right, which means in plain English, someone can sell it to you, someone can assign it to you, but most likely and most often, you, as the creator, are licensing it for someone's use in exchange for getting paid. Now, lawyers hate when I say this, but the analogy is very, very simple. It's like leasing a car from Hertz. You don't own the car, okay? When Hertz leases that car to you, you have the right to use that car for a certain limited amount of time, for a certain amount of money, and Hertz retains ownership of the car. That's what you as a photographer are doing with your images. You are, quote, renting them out. Now, lawyers hate when I say renting is equal to licensing. But as a practical matter, think of it as the same way.
Which actually goes into the next question we have from Orlando. It's, what does an architectural photographer need to do a minimum to protect his images provided to clients and online as well? And it's not just architectural photographers. It actually, we can do this for all photographers. The first thing is your paperwork. Verbal doesn't count for anything. Always make sure that everything's in writing, especially your terms and conditions. And I'll use a plug for our book, also called The Copyright Zone, one of which we'll be giving away. One we'll be giving away at, when people do the surveys at the end of this. Some lucky person will win our book. But if you don't win our book, do go out and get it. We do address this. The second thing, which is also we harp on all the time, and is why we show ourselves blue in the face in our logo that we talk about, the number one thing you can really do is register your images at the Copyright Office. There's no way around it. There's nothing better to protect yourself. That's really image insurance. So the two things you really need, first is your paperwork has to be in order, and in our book we explain, I think it's 10 things you should have in your invoice to make sure you protect yourself.
And we have a sample invoice for you to use. There's another thing, if you're doing any architectural work, those of you who shoot in homes, if you're shooting for real estate agents, or if you're doing a piece for, let's say, Us Magazine, you know, Pam Anderson at Home with the Kids, you want to have a location agreement. You want to have an agreement that says that you are able to shoot on and in the property, and if there's anything that you can't shoot, it should be in the property agreement. So, for example, if you're shooting inside homes, don't shoot burglar alarm pads. Don't shoot if there is the code to get into the house. You don't want to shoot that. But you do want to have a location agreement where the owner of the property says, yeah, sure, it's fine that you photograph. Let's take a Las Vegas casino, that you have a full run of the place. You can shoot on the gaming floor, in the bars, in the rooms. And if the casino then has a complaint against you, you can just hold up that agreement and say, well, here's the agreement that said I could shoot on the gaming floor. If you don't have that agreement, then you run the risk of shooting in a place where they didn't think you had the right to shoot, or they're going to claim you didn't have a right to shoot. Simple piece of paper avoids a lot of aggravation.
Yeah, paperwork, paperwork, which brings us to the next question we have from Gary. Basically, he does a photo meetups where they have models. Some are paid, some are not. 20 photographers, one of four people who are, quote, modeling. The models verbally agree to allowing the posting of the image on Instagram. Does the fact that they are posing for a group of photographers and verbally agreeing hold any water in court if they decide to sue for a lack of a release in writing?
Not in New York.
No, it's yes. The answer is yes, they can sue.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
No, does it hold any water? Not in New York.
Yeah.
Not in most states. Always get a signed, written model release all the time, always. That way you have it in your back pocket. And that's your protection. In the time it takes you to think about whether or not you need one, you could have had one signed and already in your drawer.
Yeah, it's releases, believe it or not, are state specific. And what we mean by that is every state has their own law on releases or rights of privacy. There's only two or three states where a verbal release might hold water. But you need proof, because it gets down to a he said, she said. You sort of need a video film of somebody agreeing to it.
For a lot of money to pay to have two lawyers fighting about whether or not there was a release, when you could have had a two-paragraph agreement, which we have in the book, you could lift it from the book, signed, and then there's no problem at all.
Yeah, and if you get... I find that on these types of things, people will sign a release quickly without even thinking about it, and they're more than happy to do it before they take pictures. And if they're going to give you a problem with that, they're likely to give you a problem even later on.
And in our form releases, there's a line in each of the various types of model releases that we have in the book where the model acknowledges that he or she has taken a copy of the release with them. And that means that if there's a lawsuit later on, if someone claims it, your lawyer has more leverage by saying the model knew and took a copy, and under certain circumstances you could ask and get your attorney's fees back from a court.
Yeah, I mean, I had one case where I did a video, and the model, after we did the video, gave me a problem about that she was a SAG actress, and it needed to be a SAG project, which means I would have owed SAG a couple thousand dollars and had to pay her quite a bit more money for that. And the issue was, I'm not a SAG signatory. I didn't need it. And what really shut it down so it didn't go on or do anything else is we simply presented her with a copy of the model release she signed. And that's all I needed.
If now, she has a problem with SAG, it's her problem. It's not Jack's problem.
But the bottom line is, always get a signature on a release. Now, the release doesn't have to be a universal, all rights, intergalactical release for some of these things, such as one of these meetups. It could be a specific release saying that it's allowed to be used by these people on social media only, no advertising. And that would really alleviate some of the fears some of these models might have. A model release can be tailored for specific usages. It doesn't have to be all-encompassing, but it's best if you do get one that is all-encompassing.
Here's a classic example. You're shooting somebody who is willing to be photographed for, let's say, a book on local celebrities. Okay, you just think of the big shot, the movers and shakers in your town, and they're going to sell a book to raise money for a new public park. Well, the president of the bank may say, I'm happy to do this so long as it's used in this book for this charitable purpose only. I don't want my picture being used to advertise either my bank or maybe one of my competitors. So your release will be tailored to that, and we have a form in the book that works for anybody, which restricts and limits how and where the image can be used.
Next question we have is from Donald. He's asking, I'm involved with a church and we're planning on live internet streaming of our service. As part of the presentation, we use a PowerPoint presentation with images. Do we need permission to use images that might be copyrighted for live streaming? Oof. If so, how do we find the images? How do we find if the image is copyrighted and contact information? The answer is yes, you need permission. If you don't and somebody sees it and it's how they make their livelihood, what you might get is a letter from someone like Ed. And trust me, you do not want to get a letter from Ed.
You see, I'm gonna dance on the head. It's gonna sound like I'm dancing on the head of the pin, on the head of a pin. Lucky I don't talk for a living. This is not a case where if the photographer walked into my office and said it was used by a church to stream a quote regular church service, I would say this case is not worth a dime. Okay, not worth me pursuing. However, let me give you almost an identical scenario where it was worth suing over. A doctor goes to a hospital in South America and does a presentation on, I'm going to change the facts obviously a little bit, on diabetes. And he is teaching all the doctors at this hospital in a South American country about how to treat new techniques in treating diabetes. And he keeps talking about a particular company's drugs. And Big Pharma company makes this, that, and the other thing. And it turns out that Big Pharma paid to send this doctor down there, and of course to mention their items which go to testing and treating diabetes. Their defense was, well, this was an educational seminar. We were talking about new products. And our position was, no, this, you masked an educational, you're using a mask and claiming it's educational when it's just an ad. It's like an infomercial. And so in your case, you're not selling anything. You're not using it for any trade or commercial purposes. So can I guarantee you in blood that no copyright owner is going to sue you? No. Theoretically, there's a case. Does it sound as a practical matter that they would have a case worth any money? No.
Also, it's real easy to find stuff that you can use online. There's so many clip art things in libraries. There's a lot of schools that provide it. Some of the museums around the world now are putting their entire libraries or other things online for access for anybody. There's a lot of free things floating around, and I think what you do instead of looking just is a search, do a search that says free images or free clip art, educational images, things like that, and I think you'll be able to find a lot of things that you can use with no problem.
If you get it from a reputable source, and it turns out that that reputable source, and let's call Getty reputable for the moment, all jokes aside, if you get it from Getty, and let's assume that Getty did not have the right to license it to you, it's not going to be your problem, it's going to be Getty's problem. So how you source it, there's no reason to run any risks at all and to pay people like me money when you can avoid, you can avoid it entirely.
We got a return question again that I want to get to, too, from John again, who did the restored, damaged, and faded images that he's been working on. He's asked, saying, in the past he's done due diligence search on PPA phone book and create a due diligence document stating what I have done. Does this make me liable? Yes.
It means that you're proving that you made an effort to find out because you knew you needed to make that effort. Now, what if it turns out that you tried as hard as you could, but you screwed up? Quick and common example. We've had cases where we've sued, some of the cases you can Google and see, celebrities, where we had recently a case against some rappers, and the other side admitted to X number of infringements after their due diligence on their own sites, and we found, actually Tamara Fitzgerald, my associate, found an additional 200 infringements which they themselves could not find. So you're establishing the fact that you were smart enough to go looking. Well, if you failed to do a perfect job, then you are, as we say in litigation, this is a legal term, dead meat.
Yeah, just saying that, oh, I looked and couldn't find anything doesn't mean anything. It's like, gee, I saw a car in the parking lot with the keys in it, and I looked all around, and I even told people, is this anybody's car? And when I couldn't find anybody, I took the car. It's still stealing, and that's the way they're going to look at it. It's like those signs when I go park my car and they say they're not responsible for something because they have, not responsible for damage, do this or that, because they have a sign up on the wall. That doesn't mean anything. They're just basically scaring you away. Yes, they are responsible. They can't, for negligence, do something to your car. Just because you state it and you stand up somewhere and saying, I looked everywhere for it and didn't find it, but I did look, doesn't let you off the hook.
People have an overwhelming tendency to believe the veracity or the truth of whatever they see on a sign. Signs look very authoritative, and most people believe them. Sports Booster.
Yeah, I'm trying to read this quickly. In New York, Sports Booster Club asking me to photograph a game which will produce a journal, selling ads to the parents, letting them use the photos I intake. Selling ads to the parents.
If this relates to kids as opposed to a pro team like the Jets, if these are kids, you want to get releases from everybody. Kids pose additional problems, and you do want to get model releases executed by their parents. And in the book, we have releases which you can use for that purpose.
And there's a lot of things, as Ed said, with kids and legal issues. I know I talked to one national photo organization that does schools and graduation pictures and things, and they have a whole staff of lawyers, and I talked to their head lawyer because we were both doing presentations at a convention, and I was amazed that a lot of the time they spend is trying to cover all the local laws, state and local, on issues on photographing kids and what's allowed to be shown, what's allowed to be passed around. They're very complex laws.
Yeah, I want to go back to one quick thing that Jack mentioned before. Traditionally, and I'm talking about going back, 100 years, model release laws were strictly state-driven. Now the federal government has taken steps to enter your profession in two ways. One is a law called the Lanham Act, which has been around a while. And all I'm going to mention about the Lanham Act is it concerns the use of a true celebrity. If you take a photograph of Tom Hanks without his permission and use it to sell a product, Hanks can sue you under what's called the Lanham Act, which is a federal law. The new field of law, and if you're going to one of your local attorneys, make sure that he or she is aware of this and that the lawyer is up to date. The Federal Trade Commission now has federal laws about using certain models in certain ways that are illegal, even if you have a release. So, quick example: you pose a model as a satisfied customer of a CPA, and it says John R. And the model is quoted as saying, "You know, John R. kept me out of prison and saved me $10,000 a year on my taxes." And John R. is not a real client of the CPA, and there's no disclaimer that says actor or model portrayal. That is a violation of federal law. If you look at our blog, look under FTC, and you'll see some of those regulations that we've talked about. Those are federal laws.
Okay, I got two. I'm going to skip one just to get to a quick one and then go back to one that's going to be a little more involved. And, of course, you can see with the way Ed talks and goes why he gets paid by the hour. We're going to try and get through a bunch of these a little quick. What's the best procedure when a client gives another party access to their images? If an architect, my client, gives images to a project's contractor, interior designer, not my client, what is the best course of action? It all depends. Again, your paperwork has to be specific as to what rights you're giving them and what they can use them for. One of the things I put in my paperwork, and it's important, and I teach this in my classes, is no third-party usage, that I am only doing it for that client. So if I'm shooting an ad, they can't pass it on to somebody else. In your case, the architect can't give it to the contractor. If you're doing something for a, let's say, a bank, the reason we tell them we put that in is in case that banker or real estate agent leaves the company to work for somebody else, he can't take that picture with him.
The big difference is if you're doing progress photos. If you are photographing a construction, let's go back to a casino, which was where I'd like to be. If they're building a new casino and you're hired by MGM to shoot progress photos, MGM is going to want to be able to use those progress photos to show electricians, plumbers, etc., where things are located. So your agreement should say that your progress photos can be shown to any contractors or subcontractors in connection with construction of the casino. But you don't want to give the subcontractor, the electrician, for example, the right to use your progress photos in their ads unless they pay you.
Again, it comes down to good, well-written paperwork that is specific. And it doesn't have to have legal language. And we really try and emphasize that. Plain language is the best thing you can do, things that anybody can understand, but you just have to be direct in the paperwork. Now, this one is, I'm going to go through it.
That's a classic.
Yeah. I found a hospital used one of my photos of an author in their annual report. Terrific. They even marked the photo with my copyright. Well, that's just letting everybody know who they stole it from.
Yeah, that puts a smile on your lawyer's face.
Right. But they never contacted me to ask permission to use or to negotiate a fee. No kidding. However, I didn't register the image with the Library of Congress. Not a good thing. That's why we recommend register everything all the time. Just do it in a group every couple of months if you have to. But it's the cost of doing business. Same way you have camera insurance in case something happens to your cameras. Registering your image at the Copyright Office is really your best image insurance. But let me continue. I published them in Photo Shelter all at once. I could register them all as published on the date I uploaded them to Photoshop, to Photo Shelter, right? That's correct. The question is if uploading them to Photo Shelter is considered publication. It's a gray area. The Copyright Office is basically letting you decide those issues.
So you should always assume that it is, because it's safer.
It's safer doing that. And the term published means presented to the public. If it's presented to the public where anybody can run across it as though it was a billboard out on the street, that can be considered published.
Yeah, don't play lawyer. Just assume it's published.
Yeah, if it's going, though, to a password-protected site or a very limited group of people, then that could be considered not published. But it is a gray area. Ed and I disagree a little bit on this, on some of it, and that's what makes it a gray area, too. And then you said, and then I have 6 months to sue from the town from the time I found the infringement. Is that correct?
No. No.
I think you're confusing a couple things, two issues here. One is published images, when you register them, you have a three-month window. Three-month window from the date of publication to register them and be protected. That means if you publish them January 1st, somebody infringes February 1st, you can still register within the three-month period and be fully protected on it. The other issue is you have 6 months to sue. You can always sue. There is a statute of limitations, but there is no six-month deadline to sue from when you find out.
Okay, let me just enhance something that Jack said. You can always register your image. If you shot an image in 2005, you can register it tomorrow. So there's no limitation, realistically. If you've taken anything since, let's say, 1978, you can register it tomorrow. There's nothing to stop you from doing that. The amount of damages and what you can recover varies greatly depending on when you register your image, which we go into great detail in the book and is the main reason why we say register everything all the time, always. Now, we have sections in the book and on the blog where we talk about you never know. So we have a story about a photograph of Britney Spears taken when she was 13 at a wedding, which was infringed. No one would have known the possibility that that image would have commercial value. But sometimes you do know for sure the moment you take that picture is going to be valuable. So in one of my cases, I have the only tape of the two planes going into both World Trade Towers on the same piece of film. We registered that immediately because everybody knew that that was a valuable piece of film. Sometimes it's very likely that the image is going to be valuable. So, for example, one of my clients was a 15-year-old model. We sued because her image was used without consent. My expert witness said, this girl is going to be huge. She's going to be big. The other side says, you don't know that for sure. And my witness, Joe Hunter, who is president of Ford Models and a big deal, said, yes, I do. And 4 years later, she's the cover of Sports Illustrated. So that's a situation. Or if you have photographs of a movie star, a celebrity, where the odds are good that the image is going to be used in Star or sometimes. Sometimes you're taking a picture of somebody who at the time you take it is an absolute nobody, but 20 years later, they're accused of a mass murder in your local town. And your pictures that when you took them were basically worthless are now worth a fortune. That's why you register everything all the time, no matter what.